a very solid upbringing here. No, we have no orphan.
We not only do we have no orphan, but we have someone being raised in a healthy nuclear family dynamic.
Exactly.
Like we could just end the episode right here, and this would be one of the happiest that you and I would be on a story champion bio.
Welcome to Casuals of Runeterra, episode 146. I'm your host, Ryan, here with your other host, Hatch.
My lord, we've done a lot of these, huh?
Yeah, just a few.
And it's still great to be back every time. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and today we're doing our first, you know, in the quote-unquote new format. It's probably an exaggeration, but the post-Legends of Runeterra world format. If you've heard our update, which you should have heard before this episode, that will give you more context, but we're doing Cassante. Cassante, very popular character. We're doing his bio. Obviously, his card doesn't exist. So now we're just picking the ones we want to do as they pertain to what we want to talk about.
Yeah, like this is, like if you listen to our little update thing, first of all, thank you. We do appreciate it. But in case you didn't, with the changes to lore and not really getting more cards on the horizon, we're taking this opportunity to really kind of dive into the stuff we're excited about. And if you listen to our Heartsteel content, you know that we're excited about just, you know, Heartsteel and like all that kind of weeaboo shit, for lack of a better term. So it was finally time to get to Cassante, and we might as well just go ahead and get it out of the way. You know, we got to put some respect on his name, or he will just run us down under our tower and kill us.
We had to talk about some game. Yeah, if you haven't been paying attention to competitive League of Legends, there's current talk about how often he is played. He's, I think, the highest played character at the moment, and people are like, we got to change some stuff. He's in every game, no matter what the condition is, no matter what the pick bans are. He's just so highly rated due to his kit. I love seeing him, right? I'm not going to complain.
I'm always happy to see that little, just that little portrait up in the screen. Like, yeah, what's up? I mean, no, I'm totally secure in who I am. What?
As he's tanking through lane, destroying everything.
Right. As far as like as a viewer, like whenever I'm watching streams and stuff, he is a very fun character to watch.
Yeah,
but God, is he a nightmare. Like just a nightmare. Which is why we're talking about him today, so he doesn't kill us.
But one thing that hasn't changed about our format is housekeeping's up top. That's where it goes. You can listen to us everywhere. Visit us at podcastcore.com for all of our info. Email us at thesamename@gmail.com. Remember, that's C-O-R. Follow us on all the platforms because that helps us greatly. We appreciate it. We don't have sponsors at the moment or ever. And then leave a like and comment wherever you listen. But word of mouth has gotten us this far. So tell a friend to learn to control their pride by listening to the Casuals of Runeterra podcast.
Okay. At the very least, the cheese is mild today. I can accept it. I'll eat it on a cracker.
So this episode we're calling The Prideful Son. And it's a simple story. It's simple, straightforward. Obviously, for me personally, I'm very excited to talk about this story because Riot did a pretty solid job of representation here. Not just on the, you know, African culture side, but in another aspect that Hetch and I touched on a lot, which we'll talk about at the end now that we're not really doing cards.
Yeah, that's a bit of a spoiler. We can't dive into that just yet, but we'll tease you. We'll give you a little teasing.
But part one, all stories are best told in three parts. Now these will be told as well. Cassante was raised in a traditional Nzuma family or Nzuman family. And this is just descendants of, oh no, brain fart.
I'm not even going to save you.
They're Arcathian at their core, but more in the southern region. And his mother often told him stories growing up about the history of their people, and why they are in Southern Shirima and how that migration happened.
Yeah, and as far as like for people who have been keeping up with our Icathia episodes, probably the most important one being Jack's for this comment,
yes,
is that the obviously Icathia is kind of ruined right now, thanks to the Void. So all that's really survived it are the guys that got caught in Zillion's bubble. So these are the refugees of that cataclysmic event, and they ended up going west because the land of Icathia is to the far southeastern regions of that continent. So they went west deeper into the deserts, and these are now their ancestors, and Cassante is one of them. And the reason I bring up Jax will become clear a little bit later once we get deeper in his story.
Yeah, and to be more specific, southwest, right? Because we're right into some geography stuff in a bit that's going to be affected by that. But yeah, this upbringing, just think about him being born in a, you know, he's a first generation type situation, right? So this upbringing, you know, instilled a sense of pride in him through his people. And for two decades past this point, he focuses on martial training, right, to become a strong warrior. You've seen him physically. He's a built guy. So that makes sense. But along with his strength, he knew that would only get him so far because he wants to be a leader in among his people. So he also studied very hard, as hard as he trained. And all these teachings allowed him to understand, you know, not only the cleverness of his people and how they've gotten there, but also of his enemies, specifically his imperialist enemies, and how they sought natural resources in their homeland and the advanced infrastructure that their homeland has built over the 500 years it's existed. So a very solid upbringing here. No, we have no orphan.
We not only do we have no orphan, but we have someone being raised in a healthy nuclear family dynamic.
Exactly.
Like, we could just end the episode right here, and this would be one of the happiest that you and I would be on a story champion bio. But as this is kind of a, you know, the stepping stone that I was using Jax for, because the martial prowess that Cassante was after was hearing about the heroes of old. Jax is a scary dude.
Yeah.
A really scary dude. So that's the shoes that Cassante wants to fill. But luckily, again, because of the sound nuclear family that he's got, his parents do help keep him grounded of like, there's more than swinging a staff. Yeah. Let's look at the rest of the world. And I'm always for lessons as far as down with the Imperials. Let's go.
Exactly. Sign us up. The Jax update that happened in League of Legends recently is great because it really shows him in a better light now that Cassante is in game as well, because Jax is almost the same size, if not bigger, right? And he's as wide. So you can now see just like the genetics, right, of that group of people. Because as we'll talk about here, so we move on to him starting his first hunts. And this is where he meets Tope, which is a marksman. And there's instantly chemistry between the two guys, right? Both in battle and emotionally, and they grow closer together. And if you've seen the graphic for Tope, he's also a very well-built, even though he's ranged, a very well-built individual. So that's just a part of the culture.
Yeah, they built soon, different. They built different.
They are built different. So as they do hunts together, they grow closer, and Cassante actually confesses his feelings at some point on one beautiful night, and Tope accepts them. He feels the same way. And then the Fire Nation attacks.
He is not exaggerating, by the way. Like, that is exactly how this is written. I'll just read it like verbatim.
Yeah.
Right. When he learned that Tope felt the same way, the two lovingly embraced and shared their first kiss. Together in that moment, under the stars, all seemed right. But all was not.
It's so great. Just a singular line.
It was just a singular line by itself, but it was not all right. Like, this was just written like a meme.
Yeah. So it takes us to part two of this story, where during the Shuriman War, which we've talked about, listen. You say the competition of content. You have the gauntlet of obviously Star Guardians are anything Runation related, and the third competitor is our Shurima content. There's plenty easily. Of it. Consume as much as you want for some context.
Like, we might as well just make a macro at this point with just a pre-recorded listing of those episodes, because there's a lot.
Yeah. So during the Shuriman War, this is where Azir and Xerath are essentially fighting for complete dominance of Shurima, but not just fighting themselves. They are sending out monsters to attack these cities, right? These abominations. And for Nazuma, specifically, there is a lion cobra hybrid that is starting to make its way on the outskirts of the city. And the leaders are like, hey, they go to Cassante and Tope. And they're like, we want you to kind of, you know, solve the problem before it becomes one. Go out and seek out this monster and see if you can stop it before it reaches the people. And they accept without hesitation because it's what they've been training for.
Yep. And not only is this something that they've been training for, but specifically for Cassante, this is kind of the dream scenario come true for him, because the shoes that he wants to fill so desperately are those of the heroes of old, like Jax. And Jax was slaying full on ascended in his time. All right. So these are big shoes to fill, but, you know, some kind of monstrosity walking about, that's as close as he can get to an ascended right now. No hesitation. Let's go. And fortunately for him, he's got, you know, Tope watching his back. So that's where we're heading off to now, is we're off on a monster hunt. We're going to go kill us some wabbits.
So on their first mission into the lair of where this beast, foul beast, is chilling, they fail, right? But they discover that it has an armor that can regenerate from head to tail, right? Now, immediately, good old immortal armor concept. This is something that has been in fantasy since before we existed.
Oh, yeah. Any Lord of the Rings fans out there, remember Smaug and Smaug. And I mean, hell, for him, like, it went down because one plate didn't regenerate. Yeah. But yeah, this has been around for millennia. So we all know we all know the drill, but for Cassante and Tope, they don't know the drill. This is new to them.
And there's been one recent, very well implemented version of this that I won't spoil here because Hetch and I are both Dresden's fans, but Hetch is behind and I refuse. But I'll give him that little nugget so that he'll actually catch up. But that being said.
Oh, I'm going to start reading tonight.
It is very good, Hetch.
You suck.
So this frustrated Cassante more than I think Tope thought it would, since he's in a rush to become like one of the greatest Nazuma warriors, right? That's his goal. Tope is more level-headed and immediately starts focusing on studying the beast and understanding what's going on to come up with strategies. But as they continue to fail attempt after attempt to defeat it, they begin to fight with each other. And this causes an issue.
And not only is this like a, you know, kind of starting an issue as far as just like their relationship, since like the very first precursor into this side of the story is talking about how their intimate relationship is building up, but they built that intimate relationship off of their teamwork.
Yeah.
And the first key to teamwork is communication. So the very first thing to go is their ability to communicate. Yeah, that's not good. I don't care what kind of Hollywood shenanigans of like Legolas bouncing around with his bow while Gimli is swinging his axe you can come up with. You have to communicate. So that's a pretty bad foreshadowing of what's going on here.
Yeah. And even though they're able to get a moment of clarity during the studying portion, if you want to call it that, where they get a piece of the Bakai's armor. Bakai, shout out if you remember the card. Our OG listeners will know that's one of the cards we point out a long time ago.
But I love that card.
Yeah, they get a piece of its armor, and Cassante's not even satisfied with that little bit of progress and what that will do for their research. And soon they're barely even talking to each other, and they finally decide to go their separate ways, which just leaves Cassante here on this battlefield.
Yeah, and as I pointed out, like, you know, if communication's going out the window as far as for, like, teamwork specifically, like, there's just not going to be any teamwork afterwards. And as far as building any kind of a relationship, you have to have communication and a sense of teamwork to do that. So this was bound to happen at this point. But as far as, like, for the story-building elements of it, this is a very crucial point as far as for Cassante's tale.
Yeah, and for years, Cassante kept attempting to brute force the problem until finally he decides to visit Tope's home. And Tope's not there, right? It's a long time has passed, but he was greeted by his aunt, who handed him a journal left specifically for Cassante's fight against the Bakai. And as he finally looks through it carefully and pays attention to all this research that Tope put together, he notices all the mistakes he was making. And he was absolutely stunned by how calculated and, like, recorded it was. And Tope went as far as to even theorizing how to slay a Bakai due to them essentially being sloppy homunculus, right? Creations by the hand of Xerath specifically, because their goal was to, hey, mash these two things together and send it out there as fast as possible. We talked about imperialism, and with that you get capitalism, and there's nothing more capitalist than rushing a product out. But as far as the homunculus, a shout out to our Full Metal Alchemist fans.
Oh, yeah. And as far as for Tope in this part of the story, like, Tope is now just kind of the inspiration for Cassante moving forward, yeah, thanks to his notes and his journal. But to put everybody at ease, we didn't really say it when we first introduced Tope. Tope is from Marimark. He's not actually from Nazuma. And Marimark is further east. So a little bit closer to, like, the original location of Akathia. And at this point in the story, his aunt actually tells Cassante that he went back to Marimark. So as far as we know, he's alive.
Yeah.
Which every fantasy story that I've ever heard of where, like, the two love interests actually, you know, confess to each other and are officially an item, and then the Fire Nation attacks, it usually doesn't end well. So let's all just take a deep breath, a great exhale, and be thankful that Tope is alive.
and appreciate the writing structure there, because the effects of the inspiration still works with the person being living, right?
Yes.
As we're about to express. So to go into part three, Cassante's now at the most confident point he's been during this whole endeavor, and he sees a path to victory based on these notes, and we go into part three. And as he trained alongside Tope's notes, he realizes he had let his pride drive him. And it frustrates him a bit because that was, like, the number one rule his mother told him, and his parents were like, hey, don't let pride take over your life. And he did, even though he followed some rules, like, you know, respect your enemy and don't think your enemy's just stupid, because that will also lead to your downfall. He did that part, but he even ended up respecting his enemies more than he respected his own partner. And seeing all this come to light made him have a realization of clarity, for one.
I mean, this is just really well written as far as just demonstrating a character's healthy path of growth, right? Like, this is not something as far as, like, someone going through a very traumatic experience and then, like, really suffering through it before they can start to heal, which is kind of more like the American media angle. Like, this is just, you know, like a young guy who made a mistake, and now he is living with his mistake, but acknowledging that that was a mistake that he made and that he's going to improve on. And I love seeing this as far as in a fantasy setting, you know, a story that's kind of written for fun, essentially, because it's a healthy lesson to have.
Yeah.
You know, like, you should be able to look within yourself and acknowledge where your shortcomings were and try to improve on it. It's never too late to improve on it. And luckily for Cassante, he survived long enough to acknowledge it and start to improve.
Yeah, you can't have an answer for a question that you don't understand, right? So that's probably the best core here, is which he's answering all these questions, and it's unlocking his potential, and that leads him to the next encounter. And when he fights this Bakai this time, it's an exhaustive battle of attrition. right? Sun Tzu's Art of War. So, So Cassante is able to force this tired Bakai, and he's also tired himself, but he gets him close to an Azumin waterfall that weakens its armor. Once again, running water, magic, fantasy, you get it. And he delivers the final blow. And as he stands there over the body of this Bakai after literal years of battle, he was more proud about the journey to get to that point and what he learned than the actual beating of this opponent.
Yeah, and this is you know, the culmination of all of this growth, right? Like we're just kind of watching a character really develop themselves and just kind of turn from a kid into an adult, right?
Yeah. Like
this is a story of growth and maturity, and it's kind of refreshing to see that in a fantasy setting, like I said. But it is also cool because, you know, like Cassante is a badass dude. Like at no point of this is it like, you know, they're getting their asses handed to them, right? Like this is, because even when they were just kind of didn't know what they were doing and banging their heads up against a brick wall, they're fighting a Bakai, which we now know, thanks to Tope's notes, are essentially failed Ascended.
Yeah.
And we know what kind of damage Ascended can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, a homunculus in Full Metal Alchemist is also terrifying and can take out a lot of people along the way. And both of the guys who went in by themselves are still alive to talk about that experience. Like, these guys are badasses, even with having to go through years to get to this point.
Exactly. And then we wrap up here with, you know, following tradition, he donates the body to science, and so the scholars can study it, because they're still, you know, this is, remember, they're keeping this thing at bay. That was the whole point. And it worked. They both served the purpose of their kingdom as well. Well, not kingdom, there's no kings, but their people, and also grew the knowledge base for the further war. This is just one battle. So anyways, donates the body to study, and then keeps pieces of the armor, because obviously you would, redesign his signature weapons as they appear in game and you have seen, which they look sick. And he created weapons with an outer layer that, when damaged over time, would regenerate, and as it's regenerated, under it is a blade. So think of it like a sheath, where he fights with the sheath of the sword until it destroyed, and then he uses the sword until the sheath regenerates.
Could you imagine seeing that in real life? Yeah. And just like, oh, cool, wait, his weapon is breaking.
Your move, anime.
If I keep attacking the weapon, it'll break, and then he'll be defenseless.
Yeah.
Oh, God, there's a sword under it. Like, oh my God, I couldn't imagine. And again, like we said, thanks to the updates that Riot's done to characters like Jax, we know how big these dudes are. So it's not like it's that gigantic guy coming at you with these basically like obsidian rocks that turn into swords that then turn back to obsidian rocks just running at you. No wonder he's going under the tower and killing you.
Exactly. So his favorite touch on these weapons was not even that technology advancement. It was the fact that he carved a symbol that he saw inside of Tope's journal that represented the Cobra Lion Bakai as an inspiration, not so much a reflection of the monster itself, just the experience, right? That fit very well with his journey. And then we move to present day, where as we know him now, he is the pride of Nazuma and the greatest leader to date. He no longer lets his ego drive his judgment, and no longer clouds his judgment, and he focuses on the future of his people as the threat of Azir and Zerath still remain. He's ready to stand and fight.
And this is like such a great story and a great wrapping point for the story, because it ends being very humble, like a very strong sense of humility at the end of this, which is really great. And it's also kind of reflecting again his upbringing. This is a guy that was, you know, born and raised in within his culture with loving parents, and is holding on to that. And it's nice to see that it's like, you know, we're not doing the you know, like the American media thing with shows like The Simpsons and Family Guy of like these toxic families and having these monster kids, right? It's nice to see that as far as, you know, just a, you know, if you treat people well, you know, they'll come out well. And it's nice to see that Cassante was humble enough to acknowledge that he didn't get to that point alone. And he's not trying to write Taupe out of that story. Yeah. Like, it's very, like, all around, it's just a good, heartwarming story, which is nice. And the fact that it's also for an immigrant story, too, like, kudos, Riot. Like, this is a good one.
And I want to apologize. At the beginning of this, I said it's a simple, straightforward story. It is straightforward, right? There's no real twist or turns here. But it's by no means simple. And it's written by, I looked it up, Michael Luo. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this is well done. Like, this is a way to write a long period of time. Because at this point, he's around 30, right? So we went from childhood to 30 in one short story with plenty of detail on how he both became physically strong, the establishment and the current state of his people and Nazuma, and also his mental strength and how he's able to go through this and use that experience to the betterment without it becoming a toxic thing, right? It's very rare that you come out of any relationship where that person is no longer in your life and you're able to only hold the good stuff and the positive impacts as you move forward, right? Usually there tends to be a, oh, fuck that bitch, right? That type of, I hate my bitch ex-wife, right? Like that type of approach to a lot of stories. Or as Hetch mentioned, you know, this person died and then you really realize what you had. It's like, no, Taupe's still around, right? But Cassante's not seeking a future with him, right?
Yeah, like they were both able to kind of move on and it's nice to, because we're really only getting it from Cassante's point of view.
Yeah.
Because who knows, like maybe we'll get like an update on Taupe at some point in the future and Taupe is just like, man, fuck that motherfucker.
It could be.
But like, luckily, like from this point of view, like as far as for Cassante, like it is, you know, like him, we're getting to see someone grow, acknowledge not only their own shortcomings, but acknowledge also like the traumas that they're going through, right? Yeah. Because as far as like the traumas that he's going through is not only, you know, the fight for your own life, because survival is traumatic. Like there's no way that these guys are going to walk away from a life or death situation without it like staining a part of their psyche at some point. But to be able to go through those kinds of experiences and still hold a past relationship in a good light is very impressive. And I mean, I know for a fact that I do not think I could honestly say I could do the same. Yeah. And it's nice to read a story like this because it reminds like a reader like me to be, you know, self-conscious about myself and, you know, be honest about the fact that there are rooms for improvement within my own life. But I'm also the kind of person that loves to read super deep into things. Like you could just go through this and read it as a story of, you know, Riot's, you know, Wakanda area and their Black Panther's journey to becoming Black Panther.
It's very
and
different.
It's like, yeah, make it a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
You could do that too. But I love to just try to read as deep as I can into things because I love these kinds of stories. I want to empathize with these characters. And that's the kind of stuff I pull out of it. And if you would like to read it, maybe that's something you could pull out of it too. Or you could hit us up at podcastcore@gmail.com and let me know I'm insane. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, the half of both from immigrant backgrounds, but as the half that's from a Jamaican African background, I was very impressed by how this story was handled. Didn't fall into a lot of the tropes. This could be told about anyone, right? But luckily it was told about Cassante. And the second part that Hetch and I wanted to talk about that we mentioned at the top is this is now another example. If you've listened to our Jonna episode, if you've listened to our Samira episode, where we get a blatant expression about the detriments of imperialism and how imperialist target areas. And Hetch, how do you feel like it was handled in this story?
I think that it was handled beautifully because it, as far as like, I obviously can't relate to like the the North American and with Jamaican descent,
yeah,
side of things. Like that's, I mean, hell, I for the most part, I like most people identify me as white instead of Latino, like just off of face value. But as far as like growing up with the
but
Cuban
then
you
start
side
speaking
of my
Spanish, and they're like, oh no,
no, people then just look at my last name and go, heck. And I'm like, yeah, that's me.
I knew something was up.
Yeah, but like, you know, growing up with like the Cuban side of my family, like it is a very like kind of tight-knit community. So it's really nice to kind of, because with this side of the story, it doesn't give the IRA vibes of growing up in a tight-knit community under imperialist rule. Mm-hmm. It gives the vibes of like, yeah, like, we're in a crappy situation, but we're all together in it, and we're going to do our best to hold on to our core values and take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is something that I can relate to heavily. Like, it's, you know, I never had to like fight for my life or anything like that, but I still grew up in like,
yeah,
oh, this is, I grew up in a world where it's like, if this is, it's like, oh, like this is something, you know, that we enjoyed, like, you know, that your father and your grandparents enjoyed in Cuba. And here are the places in town that you can try to go and find it. Or at the very least, these are the people you can talk to who can relate to that. And it helps you kind of build that community. And we get to see that in Cassante's story. You know, it's like starting with his parents, but also like the amount of people that he runs into early on in his story with how many people he trains under.
Yeah.
The first thing he does as soon as he finally succeeds this years-long journey of killing this Bakai is he goes back to the community and honors the old traditions of donating the basically his trophy, right? Because if you think of it like we're currently in the south of the United States, deer hunting is very popular down here. Mm-hmm. If you kill a nice looking buck, you're not donating that to science. You are taking that to a taxidermist and putting it on your wall. Yeah. All right. And you've got pictures all over every social media of you holding this dead deer. Cassante didn't do that because that's not what his community's about. His community's about learning more about these creatures so they can defend themselves from the imperial threat of Shirima. And like, so for me, like, that's what I, like, cling to. And it's, like, it's done well because it doesn't have that overbearing Star Wars feel to it of the Empire's ruined everything. It has that feeling of, like, yeah, it exists and it's really bad, but we're together and we can resist it together.
Yep. This man's talking about camaraderie and coming together and solidarity. What? Anyways, I want to leave us, you know, speaking of solidarity, I want to leave us on some great words from Michael Parenti. Look up his speeches in the past, like from the 80s, 90s, where two things that are mentioned here very vividly were imperialism and resources. And he talks about very clearly that there are no poor countries. There are only overexploited countries. And you don't go to a country as an imperialist nation to make money if it's poor. You go there to exploit the riches and resources they have. And that's expressed here very openly, and I appreciate that a lot. Because as Hetch mentioned, they notice that because they understand their history, they understand what they have, they understand the infrastructure they built, their sovereignty, and as the threat of that imperialism comes, they're able to come together and resist it. And like I said, I apologize again. This is by no means a simple story.
No, not a simple story, but there's nothing more I can add that Parenti hasn't said better myself. So, you know, like go check out some of Parenti's books.
Oh yeah.
And it'll paint the picture better than any words I can put together.
But with that, he's done his part. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with the next episode.
Yeah, take care, everybody.